Hi, everybody. I'm Daryl Cagle, and this is the Cagle Cast, where we're all about editorial cartoons. Today, we're talking about the cartoonists that are threatened with jail because of their difficult regimes that they live in. And here are our three guests. Terry Anderson, who's the wonderful executive director of Cartoonists Rights at Network International, and he works hard to protect the rights of cartoonists to draw around the world in repressive regimes. We've got Zara Omaroglu, who is a cartoonist that is being threatened with jail in Turkey. And we've got Imad Hajjaj, who was thrown into jail in Jordan for his cartoons. And we're going to look at their cartoons. So we're going to look at cartoons from a whole bunch of great cartoonists from around the world that were also threatened with jail. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you, Dan.
Hi, Terry, let's talk about this first one.
Sure. This is a version of an image drawn by Atena Farghadani a decade ago now. That's when she first was known to the outside world, outside Iran. She posted it to Facebook. It's a cartoon of parliamentarians portrayed as apes and oxen. And at that time, legislation was being passed to curtail reproductive rights for women in Iran. So she's in jail right now. She's in jail right now because if we move on to the next image, you can see the cartoon again presented as part of an exhibition of her work. This was at the Oslo Freedom Forum this year. She was told if she attended, she would be arrested. So she did not attend, but she objected and protested. She posted the following image, a cartoon talking about the Ministry for Information in Iran, onto a wall in Pasteur Street in the middle of Tehran, and she was immediately arrested. That was in the springtime of this year, and she's been in jail since.
Iran has a history of jailing cartoonists.
Of course, and at the moment, even more so, protesters and, of course, brutal treatment of women.
Part of what we see is that women cartoonists have it worse. They seem to be less tolerant of women cartoonists.
I would agree with that, and my dear colleague Zara will talk about that, no doubt, in due course, but there's a couple of other examples that we'll talk about today that demonstrate that.
Who is this?
This is Ashraf Omar. He's in Egypt. So what we have here are the last run of cartoons that were published on an independent news platform there called Almanasa. Cartoons about the economy in Egypt. This one is about power cuts during the summer, electricity in short supply, even though the president was pushing ahead with an electric monorail project in Cairo. The last cartoon portrays Sisi, the leader of Egypt, putting out a fire that's labeled debt crisis with gasoline that's labeled loans. So it's a comment about the economy, about economic policy. Nevertheless, plainclothes policemen came to his home in July, arrested him, initially denied that they were holding him. We didn't know where Ashraf was for about 72 hours. They eventually admitted that they had him, and he's been charged with support for terrorism.
And now he's now stuck. He's been in jail since July.
Indeed so. He's stuck in this repeating cycle. Every 15 days, they hold a conference just like we're doing right now. They have a video call. A judge and a lawyer get on the line. They say, give him 15 more days. That's agreed to. It's a holdover from the days of COVID, and it hasn't been abandoned since. It was supposed to be a temporary emergency measure, but it's how business is still done in Cairo. And so out of every 30 days, he gets to have a visit for 30 minutes. So his wife has seen him for about half an hour every month since.
You know, we're emphasizing here the cartoons that get cartoonists thrown in jail or threatened with jail, but there are lots of other ways that governments use to chill speech by cartoonists. There are a whole lot of lawsuits, and we see these lawsuits also in EU countries, countries that you expect to have a free press or that have a free press written into their constitution or that are US or EU allies that are people that absolutely should not be doing any of this crap that you don't expect. We expect it from Iran. We don't expect it from EU countries or from Turkey or from good allies like Jordan, and that's terrible.
Yeah, and it's the same all over. I think it's an escalating problem. It doesn't really matter where you are in the world. Governments everywhere, almost regardless of their politics, left, right, or center, are all becoming less tolerant of dissent and of protest. And part and parcel of that is a lack of tolerance when it comes to satire.
Sarah, you're in Turkey.
Yeah.
And you're being threatened by the government of Turkey with jail.
Yes.
And you have escaped to Germany because of the threat of jail. And you really want to go back to Turkey.
Yes, I want to go back. But I don't know after the trial if I can go back or if there will be any imprisonment. And if at the best result, I mean best conclusion will be like acquittal, but if even acquittal will happen, I will still have this threatening and I have this risk of happening again. So I don't know if it's a logical thing to go back, but I want to go back. Of course, I miss everything, like my loved ones, my house. Now I'm in a residency program in Germany, who invited me for 6 months, and trying to figure out how things will go after the trial, because it has been like postponed for, I mean, they don't even need a reason to postpone it anymore. Basically, the judge doesn't come, you know, the reasons like this. They ask for a report, which takes 2 years for them to write, for example. So it's like a never-ending process, and I don't know what's going to happen. We will see in
So the February. Point is to just have the threat hanging over your head and by inference over the head of all the other cartoonists to keep them all in line rather than necessarily throwing you in jail. Perhaps a long-term threat works better. This is one of your cartoons that you did as a magazine cover that you thought was the reason why you were being threatened with prison and was actually the next cartoon. But, you know, the threat hangs over every cartoon.
It's very sad that, like, this cartooning tradition is almost coming to an end, which I don't want to believe. But very sadly, like many of my colleagues, they don't even draw anymore because all the magazine, not all, Le Monde still continues to be published, but with many limitations, so it's really hard to try to survive for Le Monde also, and any the other magazines are like closed, unfortunately. So there is not even a platform to continue drawing. This is very sad because Turkey has a very strong tradition of cartooning, even starting from the Ottoman times, even before actually. But due to the like the pressure from the government and also the pressure from the people that are being supported by the government, also just ordinary people, just readers. But it's an atmosphere, you know. I mean, when government supports people who threatens us, so they will continue to threaten us. It's basically, I don't know if the threat is right, threaten is right. Sorry about my English, but I think it's clear. So yeah.
Well, we remember cartoonist Musakart, who was thrown in jail, and the cartoonist Saul got together and did drawings in his support, and where we read about newspapers being closed because they oppose President Erdogan, and we read about other journalists having similar problems and being thrown in jail in Turkey. And that's terrible because Turkey is an ally of the United States. They're supposed to have a free press. They're trying to get into the EU where a free press is a requirement, and they just seem terribly oppressive, particularly in cases like you that are just so obviously nothing that they should be messing with. And it's very disturbing, particularly, I think, with Turkey.
Yes, yeah. It is really. We are very far from freedom of speech. We are really not even close to it. I mean, journalists, artists, cartoonists, editorial cartoonists, we are all facing the same thing in different ways. I had a very funny moment. I want to tell this because it's a very funny moment that I had with my journalist friend who was put into jail for 5 years in total, but many times. I mean, he gets out and then they put him into prison again. They are like playing with him. So he's a very famous journalist in Turkey. We were in a taxi going to a film.
What's his
gala.
Name?
He's Barış Pehlivan. Everyone knows him in Turkey. So we were in a taxi, like going to a film gala, and we were just talking about this and that. I mean, it was supposed to be a joyful moment, a peaceful moment, because we had a nice day. But then he started to, as it was very normal because we are so used to it. This is the funny part. He started to talk about, like, he knows my case, of course, and he was like, okay, don't be afraid. I will tell you what to do when you go to prison. And imagine that you are not eating very healthy when you're outside, but in jail, they will serve you at least twice parsley, you know, or herbs, you know. It was a very funny moment. And he started to tell me how to do exercises in jail. And I stopped for a moment and asked him, okay, are we really aware of what we are talking about? Is everything is so normal? It's a very funny moment. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, why are we two friends are talking about this? So it's such a, like, a thing that we are used to, which is very sad, actually.
And absurd to be in that situation over a cartoon anyway, a cartoon of any description, but your cartoon in particular. I think we should have a look at it. because we keep referring to it, but we haven't seen it yet.
And
it needs to be seen.
Yeah.
Tell us about this.
Can you believe I have been judged of prison from 6 months to 3 years because of this cartoon, because of this ordinary, just a funny cartoon about a couple? I can't believe.
This is about a COVID cartoon about losing his taste and smell, which is really quite funny. And it read in a magazine where this is appropriate to the content of the magazine.
Yeah, I drew this for Le Mans. And I mean, there are many cartoons like this in, there were actually many cartoons like this. So it was normal to draw this. I mean, it's nothing. We drew many more, like if it's obscene, we draw much more obscene cartoons, if you will tell it like obscene. So it was just an ordinary cartoon, but the judge, we have routine checks weekly. I mean, if you're publishing a satirical magazine or like a cartoon magazine, it goes to the judge, a council, and then they do it like a routine, you know, regularly. And so they checked these that week's magazine, Le Mans magazine, and then they found this cartoon obscene and they started an investigation. But they called me from the magazine telling me that the police came to the to Le Mans to ask about me because an investigation has started. And I wasn't expecting any investigation or anything about this cartoon. So the cartoon that came to my mind was the previous one about COVID in Iran one, which I told, which also Terry told it's connected. Yes, this one. Because after this cartoon, maybe I should translate it. It says COVID in Iran. And the woman says, oh, something like, oh, what a chance. At least our mouth was open. So it was it was a cartoon about like the mandatory dress code in Iran, these wearing hijab, you know, the things that are going on these days about women and this obligatory dress code. So the cartoon was about women who forced to wear this. But it was so misunderstood and like Turkish media targeted me and I had many lynchings in social media and like being threatened by many groups from Iranian media also. And a group called, like, I don't remember, but it was like Islamist lawyers, blah, blah, something. I don't even remember. There was so many. And then they said, okay, you will pay for it, blah, blah. They called Le Mans and they called me. And there were many, like, posts in social media. And just after, so this cartoon came to my mind when our editor called me and said, okay, you have an investigation started. But it's always the same, you know, they find the most insulting way to punish you, insulting in their point of view. I think it's not an insulting but they think like this, I think, because for a woman it's an in a conservative society it's an insulting thing to draw about sex and like a couple having sex, blah blah. So it's always connected, but they find the most insulting way to punish you. So yes, just a very few, maybe a week or 2 weeks later, that I after I drew this cartoon, the investigation for the other obscenity cartoons started. Yeah, this one. And I was really shocked. I couldn't believe. And I thought, okay, an investigation started. It happened. Okay, absurd, but it happened. But it won't turn to a lawsuit. I was almost sure because I found the number of the judge and I called him and he laughed to the cartoon. And I called the lawyer and lawyer also laughed to the cartoon. And I mean, everyone was laughing. So I thought, okay, not a big problem. It will be okay. It will just be closed. But then I learned that in a very short time, I learned that it turned to a trial and I'm being judged from 6 months to 3 years of prison and plus a fine. And it has been...
Well, it seems clear that they're more annoyed with you than the other cartoonists because you're a woman and they're trying to stifle cartoonists in general because... everybody is watching this.
Yeah, it's always harder when you're a woman because there is a role that that you have to play as a woman. You know, you have to be a woman like at home, like you have to give the government kids, you know, children and be silent, you know, play your role in a conservative society. I cannot say it's an Islamist. I mean, the government is like this maybe, but the society, I mean, we have many different people. like seculars and conservatives. So I don't want to define it like an Islamist society. It's not actually.
No.
Yeah, it's not. But it's, yeah, I can say there is a big conservative group who will judge a woman for this. I mean, for talking about sex or for not playing the role that is being imposed to you.
It's patriarchal and conservative. More
other cartoonists in Turkey have gotten in trouble for criticizing President Erdogan. And we hear about newspapers being shut down and journalists going to jail again for criticizing the government. Are you also criticizing the government? And do you get a sense that they're coming down on you to generally chill you?
Actually, 10 years before, I was very shocked when I was in my personal archive, you know, when I was checking my cartoons, because I didn't feel like there is such a huge change in my cartoons. But when I was checking my cartoons I drew 10 years ago, I saw that I criticized the president and the government. I drew many things, but in time it has changed completely. You cannot like criticize anything right now in a magazine. And it's very funny that my male colleagues are being judged of criticizing like a government or drawing about Erdogan or the other government members. But when you're a woman, you are being judged more about like morality issues. I find it kind of funny because I drew really maybe harsh cartoons. I don't know if harsh is a negative word, but hard, I can say, I don't know. Very strong cartoons about government also, but they wanted to judge me because of this cartoon. But my male colleagues they're facing many like trials also about political cartoons.
There's nobody at the present time that has problems that compare with Zera's, which is maybe a blessing. But as you allude to, there's been many cases in the past. Musa Kart is probably the best known internationally. Erdogan went after him 3 times. The first 2 times he was effectively laughed out of court because the judge took a dim view of first the prime minister and later the president trying to suggest that cartoons of him were somehow out of the ordinary or beyond the pale. Third time round, Erdogan won. Musa Kart stood trial along with multiple staff members from the Cumhuriyet newspaper. And in Musa's case, it was actually in the end nothing to do with the cartoons. He was undone by his choice of travel agent because the prosecution suggested that the travel agent was a front, was laundering money for fifth columnists and seditionists, and that Musa was well aware of that, and all the poor guy tried to do was book a holiday. So for the sake of that, he went to jail. And as you say quite rightly, Daryl, as a whole, Turkey had a heritage and a history of cartooning to rival France, I would say, and it's all been degraded terribly in the recent past.
I think I want to add something here. As far as I know, the man that Musa Kart was in touch with that caused him to go to jail, you know, the owner of the tourism agency, I think he became a minister or something after this, which is, yeah, it's very, really, it's strange. And plus, Musa Kart is the most famous one that we all know, but there are many cartoonists that was being judged for now.
Yeah.
I don't think if there is ongoing trials, I'm not sure. As far as I know, one friend of mine is being judged, but I don't know if the case ended. But it's very sad that we are so used to it. And even if we are talking like in a group of colleagues, they are like, okay, it's normal. So we accept it, which is the worst part, I think. We don't even report it, which is really sad.
The one that made me laugh back in the day was the poor guys that did the caricature of Erdogan on the front cover of Penguin magazine. Do you remember this one? Where Erdogan was buttoning his coat, but because he was making a circle with his thumb and forefinger, that was deemed to be something to do with assholes, as I recall. And so misinterpreted.
I don't know if it's politically correct to say gay, but please correct me.
That's what I'm kind of, alluding to. And Erdogan saw it and got in a strop about it and said, we're going to take these guys to court.
Zara, can you talk about this one?
Yeah, this one is, it's very, I cannot believe each time, Terry, you know, I'm always telling this, but I really cannot believe when I'm telling this about these cartoons, because it's so ordinary, funny cartoons. It's written like in a slang way, but I will try to translate. It's written on the grave stone that the flex seed didn't give a shit. Like, it doesn't work. Sorry if it's rude, but the translation of the cartoon is this. I drew this because, on the TV, on YouTube, everywhere, like, they were these doctors or people who are not doctors, they are trying to sell these flaxseed. It's an industry, you know, flaxseed will make you live forever, like this fake news.
So this is bogus COVID cure.
Yeah, it's the cure for everything, like COVID and everything, you know, as they say. Anyway, so yeah, maybe I drew this after the COVID cartoons as a cure. Anyway, so I drew this and it's such an ordinary cartoon and I wasn't expecting any reactions. I was almost shocked when I saw the comments under the post and like not just the comments, I had like messages and like in some websites, they started to talk about it, like threatening me and saying very, really harsh things like you will go where did your colleagues from Charlie Hebdo went, like threatenings like this, or like you will see what happens in your own grave, blah, blah, you will pay this hard. And I was really shocked because I didn't understand. It's just flax seeds. I couldn't believe what's going on. I didn't know. And then I learned from the comments that the prophet has a saying about flax seeds. So all the Islamists, they went mad about this. But how am I supposed to know that, like all the sayings of the prophet? I mean, why am I expected to know it? I have no idea.
Do you have to be aware of everything that's gone on in the Quran to make sure you don't put that stuff into your cartoons?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should read it carefully, not to mention what's going on there in my cartoons. Well,
if I might add something here, I think the problem is not with the Islam, it's about the fatwas, the extreme explanations of Quran, which make it difficult for some Muslim cartoonists to do their job.
Yeah, like, but there are many different groups.
Yeah, many explanations, many fatwas about it.
And so there are very different groups who can perceive and interpret the cartoons.
Turkey is considered one of the most tolerated Islamic countries with arts and cartooning. And the contrary of other extreme countries, for example, still in some countries, some Islamic clerks say that you cannot draw or portray living things. It's haram. It's forbidden. Just drawing an animal or a human being for them is unacceptable. Can you imagine? But while in other countries, they consider cartoon art, they respect it, they tolerate it for certain degrees and variations from country to another.
Yeah, but
well, that's a shock to me because I think of Turkey as being a place where there's a whole bunch of great cartoonists. And when I look at where our traffic to our sites comes from around the world, Turkey is one of the main countries that wants to visit our editorial cartoons. We get it from the Romance language countries and from Turkey. My goodness, to have Turkey be one of the least tolerant of cartooning, that's shocking.
It's really shocking for us also because we drew many things. I mean, there were many satirical cartoon magazines. It was better than a newspaper to learn about the news from editorial, from the cartoons, political cartoons, and it had a very strong impact on people. So it's shocking for me to see how it is right now, actually. It's very sad.
And these comments on the right are threats to you.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know which ones, but yes.
Yeah.
It was very strange. I had to translate these comments and I couldn't believe I'm translating this because all these threatenings and swears in Turkish, I had to translate it all. It was such a weird moment, you know.
Boy, what are we looking at here, Terry?
So my organization, Cartoonist Rights, we give out an award every couple of years. We alternate with the Freedom Cartoonist Foundation in Geneva, led by Patrick Chapat. I believe he's been a guest on the podcast before. So this is the cartoonist we most recently gave an award to, Abacor, out of Bolivia. And his cartoons that got him in trouble concerned the Attorney General, Wilfredo Chavez. In this cartoon, the guy himself, Chavez, is portrayed kind of in free fall amid an ongoing scandal, denying that the OAS had done an audit in Bolivia. And as a result of this, and as the second cartoon that we'll see with the same figure, big shock of white hair, Chavez here is pulling a rabbit out of a hat and the rabbit's holding a sign saying no fraud. And because of these cartoons, Abacor, very much like Zera, got a lot of death threats online, threats of violence directed not just towards him, but also a member of his family. But in his case, Abacor became quite concerned and convinced that he was being followed, that there was incidents in the street outside his home, and so on, that, that gave him cause for concern for his own safety. And the big trade unions for journalism in Bolivia all sounded the alarm and said that they were very alarmed as well, very concerned for his safety. So we gave him our Courage in Cartooning Award in 2023. He came to DC, to Washington DC, to receive his award. There he is with myself and our vice president, Nick Kosar, himself an Iranian cartoonist who got in trouble with the regime.
Yeah, Nick was in jail in Iran as well.
Yes, yes. And in actual fact, in absentia, not so long ago, got sentenced to another 40 years. So technically, if he were to ever return, which obviously is not inclined to do, but if he were ever to return, he would go straight to jail again.
Well, I expect it in places like Bolivia and Iran. Those are both notably repressive regimes. What shocks me is that it's spreading to countries that should have free press, and I'm troubled. Tell us about Rashida, Terry.
Rashida is one of the two cartoonists honored by our counterparts in Geneva this year, the Freedom Cartoonist Foundation. So Rashida doesn't work with, or at least didn't work with, any particular news platform. She posts to Instagram.
Rashida is from India, and
she's in India. That's right.
She's doing drawings of Modi, and she draws in a stick figure style just for social media.
So Instagram primarily. Yep.
She's suffering just because of what she posts on social media. And I should mention that in a whole lot of countries in the world, cartoonists aren't published at all in a traditional sense. They just get in trouble for what they put on social media.
Yeah. So a couple of cartoons in particular got her in trouble. We can't look at them, unfortunately. Her lawyer has been quite clear that he believes that even showing them again in the context of a discussion like this would make life harder for Rashida. So these cartoons that we're looking at are just examples of her work rather than the specific ones that got her in trouble. But they were about the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, after receiving a complaint from a law student, deemed them to be sufficiently insulting that the criminal charges were warranted. So rather like Zera, Rashida's in a kind of a loop. The case just goes round and round and round. Like courts in all countries, India's Supreme Court and its lower chambers are all dealing with a backlog from the pandemic. So there is, on the one hand, a legitimate excuse for cases not being heard quickly. But on the other hand, in our opinion, with cases like this, and this has certainly been the case with Zera's as well, excuses are found to delay, because keeping the case active but not anywhere near a conclusion has a psychological effect. Obviously, there are costs involved if you're retaining a lawyer. It also chills you, so to speak, in terms of the cartoons that you produce while the case is still active, because you worry about, are you aggravating the complainants? Are you going to make things worse? Are you more likely to get a harsher sentence, depending what you draw in the meantime? So it actually behooves the people that want to suppress the cartoonists to have the case go on indefinitely and actually never come to trial or come to a definitive end, because, of course, there's always the outside possibility of acquittal, and that doesn't suit them.
I hear from other cartoonists in India that describe different ways that the government gives them trouble and makes it clear that they want their cartoons to be towing the line. One cartoonist friend in particular was living in a government apartment building, which I guess is common in India, and the government kicked him out of his apartment. There are other creative ways that governments use to oppress cartoonists.
And a lot of requests to the social media platforms to remove material, and Twitter in particular is very compliant with the Indian government and takes down anything that they ask. Here is Rashida. This is her receiving her award in Geneva from Patrick in the centre, along with Marie-José, his vice president at the foundation. Nobel Prize winner Shirin Ebadi from Iran is on the left. On the right is Christian Amanpour from CNN. And the other gentleman holding an award is Zunzi, the other cartoonist that was honoured this year. Zunzi's in Hong Kong, where suppressive security laws that have come in as Hong Kong further integrates with mainland China.
That's no surprise.
Yeah, it's led to many cartoonists leaving. Zunzi has stuck the course. He doesn't want to leave, but he lost his newspaper post of some 40 years with the Ming Pao paper last year after multiple cartoons of his were criticised by various public figures from the administration in Hong Kong.
Who drew this one?
That's Zunzi. So these are Zunzi's cartoons now. criticizing the education system. So not only has Zunzi's newspaper post come to an end, but he's a very popular cartoonist in Hong Kong and has been for a long time. All of his books have been removed from all of the libraries.
Well, this is China. This is not a surprise.
The little character in Chinese is law. So it's the law being used as a weapon.
He's very brave to push back against this.
He's translated this one for us. So this is one of the cartoons that ran in Ming Pao newspaper. In particular, drew ire.
The policeman says, "So what nasty things the students have done today, headmistress?" And headmistress says, "A student in class 6A spoke foul language. 5C student lost an eraser. A laser pen is found in the school bag of a boy in 3D. A teacher of 2A is threatened by a student who disobeyed him."
So just talking about all the various infractions and misdemeanors that have come in as a consequence of these changes to the laws in Hong Kong.
I should say that there are lots of great Chinese cartoonists, and they have editorial cartooning there, although it is all very explicitly toeing the line on just about every issue in China. We have Chinese cartoonist Luo Ji, who we syndicate, who's the cartoonist for the English language China Daily newspaper. And he's considered an official voice of the Chinese government, which owns his newspaper. I find that the Chinese cartoonists are remarkably unmotivated to push the boundaries. You know, you look through lots of other countries where cartoonists are threatened, and I would think all the Arab countries where they're always frustrated at pushing against the boundaries and trying to say what they want despite the government pushing them back. And it is it's telling to me that in Asia, we don't see that. The cartoonists do not seem at all motivated to push back against the boundaries. And perhaps that's just because they've spent a longer time with a more repressive regime. I don't know. But I can't explain why I don't see the motivation there that I see in other countries like the Arab countries.
Yeah, there's some bright spots. There's some good cartoonists in the Philippines. There's Zunar in Malaysia, of course. I think you're right with the observation that there's some sort of kind of perhaps somewhat more fundamental cultural difference that perhaps has made people generally less reluctant. I think Hong Kong cartoonists are different in essence because for so many years Hong Kong was in effect Britain, and so the cartoonists there were influenced and were accustomed to seeing a different kind of material. But there's no doubt that, as I say, for the majority of cartoonists that were in Hong Kong, things have become so intolerable now that they've actually left.
Here's another one.
I have a question. Sorry.
Sure.
Maybe you told, but I might have missed. Is Zunzi right? Zunzi can continue to live in Hong Kong right now, or he had to leave?
He's still there, but his opportunities have shrunk with no newspaper carrying his work. And as I say, with his books, the books of his cartoons effectively being withdrawn, his career is kind of stalled at the moment. But he has a family. He doesn't, it's complicated. As you know yourself, it's not easy to just immediately leave.
So his new cartoons are appearing only on social media.
For the time being, yeah.
Here's another one from that Zunzi translated for us. Recruiting world-class talents, priority will be given to applicants who can tolerate despotic government.
Still prides itself on being this big economic hub, of course, so there's a lot of emphasis on people coming to Hong Kong to study and companies basing themselves there and so forth.
And now please come and look at another museum's collection.
Lost a little in translation there, I think, but he was helping us out. So it's a straightforward cartoon about censorship of artwork in Hong Kong. This is Safa Oda. Yep. So Safa is one of the cartoonists we're still keeping an eye on in Gaza. Safa's cartoons are really not political. She's a very emotional cartoonist. Her cartoons are about family, they're about relationships, motherhood. And in the last few months, her home was destroyed by the IDF, and a family of about 20, I believe, including something like 11 or 12 children, are now in a refugee camp in Khan Yunis, Gaza. So the cartoons like these, previously she was posting to social media, but if we cycle through them, you'll start to see a difference in the quality, the way that they're drawn. So this again is more typical. Obviously the bombardment had started at this point.
So Safa is a cartoonist in trouble simply because she's a resident of Gaza.
By dint of where she happened to be born, exactly. So here we are, this is very different. You can see the difference in the quality of the drawing, and that's because, again, obviously having lost her home, home and everything that was in it, and with material being in such short supply generally, she's no longer drawing on pieces of paper. Safa draws on the plastic sheeting on the side of the tent. She takes a photograph, posts the drawing to her Facebook page and Instagram, and then erases the drawing and starts over. So it's about as grim a testament to where we are right now as you can imagine. And this is a different cartoonist, Mahsen Al-Khatib, again in Gaza. This was the last cartoon that she posted. This was shortly after the bombings of the hospitals in northern Gaza, roughly a month ago now, if I recall correctly. And she died. She died about a day or so after this cartoon was posted, again, when where she was in the Jabalia refugee camp in the north of Gaza was bombed again by the IDF. So this really arrested the attention of cartoonists everywhere. And our colleague in Italy, Gianluca Costantini, spearheaded an initiative to get her recognised at the big Luca festival that was happening shortly after the news broke, and as you can see, that was successful. So an award was given at that event in her memory. This is my cartoon. This and the following one I've included just as an illustration of where we are and the journey that I've been on. So the first cartoon I drew a decade ago. It's a Charlie Hebdo cartoon. It'll be 10 years since the attack this January. And like most cartoonists, I wanted to respond in some way. So it's a fairly straightforward cartoon. The Grim Reaper standing over a gravestone marked cartoonist and the Grim Reaper saying. So the following one, 10 years later, has two officials on a dockside. There are people in boats, small boats, dinghies floating in the water. And the first official says, "Oh, what's this lot story? War, famine, fire, flood?" And the other fella says, "Cartoonists. They say they're not welcome anywhere. 10 years ago, we were all worried about terrorism and extremism and Islamic fundamentalism, etc., etc., etc. A decade later, it's displacement. It's refugees and the cartoonists that we're working with. Increasingly, when they come to us with an issue, it's either something that they think will lead to them having to leave their home, or it does lead to them having to leave their home.
So, Imad, we come to you. This is the cartoon that got you thrown in jail.
Yes, yes. Okay. So this is the cartoon I got the jail for. It was published in the year 2020. Again, it's social media. Jordan, just like many other countries, we have a big problem in the newspapers. They aren't working anymore. So me, just like many others, I publish my cartoons outside Jordan. This cartoon was published in a Qatari newspaper. What I did actually was just sharing my cartoon from that newspaper into my Twitter account. I still remember that day when I got that strange phone call. It was obviously some man in the Jordanian security. He was really, really angry. He was really pissed off. And he was talking about my cartoon. And he was saying that I will regret that cartoon. And that same day, I was arrested. Although many of my friends advised me to delete the tweet. I did that. The cartoon was only posted for a few hours, 5 hours, something. After I deleted the tweet, I expected things to calm down. But by the afternoon, I was coming back. I was outside the city of Amman. I was coming back to Amman, and one of the checkpoints just stopped me. I was driving my car with my wife. They looked, they dealt with me in a rough way. They double-checked my ID, and I ended up in the jail. And it was really shocking, really bad situation for me and more for my family, for my wife. You know, it's the first time I go to jail ever. And all the time I was isolated from the world. I didn't know what's happening. I didn't know even it was about that. I was just expecting it is because of that cartoon. So the next day.
So they didn't tell you that it was this cartoon. They never laid down the rules they expected you to do to comply to have your cartoons be okay.
Yeah, at the checkpoint, police just told me that you are wanted. You are not allowed to drive. You should go now. We will transfer you to the main police department in Amman. And the other day, I met and we have a department in the police called the cybercrime department. So I met one of the officers, which I used to know because I used to give him some of my cartoons. He happens to be a cartoon fan, and he was really a nice officer. But he was kind enough to tell me what's happening. He told me it was about this cartoon. He says it's obviously a case raised against you from the state, from the Jordanian government, in the name of the Emirati embassy in Jordan. And I was transferred to the car that day, accompanied by the police. case. I was expecting, just like many times before, I will stand before a judge, he will hear me, and I will be bailed out or go to my home. Obviously, this one was different. I was shocked that the judge transferred me into a martial court.
A military court?
Yeah, military court. It is a very, very dangerous court. It is.
Can you explain what the cartoon is about?
Yeah, I let me explain. It's this cartoon simply starts with an Arabic line at the top of the cartoon, which is simply a news item that was published by that time. It says, Israel asking United States not to sell F-35s for United Arab Emirates even after the normalization deal with Emirates. So the Emirati media was talking to the Arabs, we are making deal with the Israelis, we are normalizing relations because we are expecting to have arms sell to us. We will be getting tanks. And
who is this guy that's getting spat upon?
Yeah, this is a trick, Daryl. In Arabic cartooning, it's sometimes, it's our trick. Sometimes it's better not to mention who that guy is, just to stay on the safe side. But everybody will know it. So what's this about it? It's Mohammed bin Zayed. Mohammed bin Zayed. But I didn't wrote that. So legally, I didn't write his name. Even my tweets, sometimes I draw presidents. I do a hashtagging. I put Trump, hashtag CC, for example. But in this case, I didn't mention his name. So legally, this cartoon should be clean. Anyway, I was arrested. I knew from the judge it was about this cartoon and two cartoons which were previously shared on my Twitter account. And I was transferred into the military court or the martial court. I was really shocked. I wasn't believing what is happening with me. You know, this kind of cart is usually dedicated for dangerous criminals or terrorists or people who threaten the state, not for cartoonists. And it was really, really terrifying. And me, accompanied by the police and standing in front of all of these martial military judges. And they were obviously very, very angry. And they were just asking me questions just to make sure that I am the owner of that Twitter account and that it was me who posted or did that share. And that's it. I ended up in the jail. And let me keep explaining the cartoon. Sorry, Dale. So it's basically saying Israel asking United States not to sell Emirates F-35 planes. At the same time, we see MBZ or somebody like it holding the Israeli peace, the Israeli dove, the Israeli deal that he made. It's spitting on his face. It's rejecting him, even though he did that deal with them. That peace is spitting on his face. And the spit shape is shaped like the F-35 because it's an...
Is that plane deal the world. Abraham Accords?
Yes, the Abraham Accords, yes. So there's a playing on word thing here, the letter F in English. It sounds like the tef in Arabic, which means spit. So this is a twist of the cartoon. So I just throw it, and it was published in Al Arab Al Jadid newspaper. They find it suitable, and they just run it. And I was put to jail. I spent 5 days in assault jail. It was the peak of the pandemic at that time. Horrible hours. Horrible times I spent in that prison. I didn't know what's happening outside. I got 3 or 4 visits from my lawyer and from my wife and another friend. The lawyer was not optimistic about my case. He told me, Imad, we are being judged under a very dangerous article in the martial court law, which is threatening Jordanian relations with a friend state. And I know from an experiment that there's a guy called Zaki bin Rashid, an Islamic activist. He had been put to jail 1 year for this same accusation. So you better prepare yourself. You will be present at least 1 year. I was really shocked. I remember my first night at jail that I missed my family. I missed my room. I missed my daily routine. For a time, I was crying, actually. It was really, really bad times. I made some friends, actually, in my cell at the jail because one of the officers happened to be a fan of Abu Mahjoub. He used to see my cartoons, and he told me that his sons loved my work very much, and he was really shocked to see me in the jail. So he did.
Mahjoub was a cartoon character that you made very popular in Jordan.
Yes. It's considered that like the man of the street in Jordan. Everybody in Jordan know him. So the guy was really nice, and he put me in like the 5-star cell of that jail. The only cell that have hot water and a little miserable TV, but means a lot for us. So during the 5 days, I made some friends, really nice people. I cabinet in my cell. There were like four of them. I found a place where you can buy some notebook and ink pens. I did both a notebook and a pen and tried to do some sketches inside the cell. All the other prisoners, they insisted me to draw their faces and did that for every single one of them and did some cartoons from the things I hear during the prison. At the fifth day, I was isolated, totally isolated about what's happening outside. So at the fifth day, I still remember that day, I was preparing myself for the lunch, which was a roasted chicken. They serve it once a week, which was a really big thing in that prison. So I was standing on the queue to get my daily meal. And suddenly I got that policeman coming to me directly, said, "Imad, you are wanted. You should go to the head office of the warden or the prison manager." He took me there and they informed me, "Imad, you are being released." "Why? What happened?" I didn't know. When I was released, it is as simple as that. You take your stuff and go out. So I was suddenly on the street. Nobody's waiting for me. But I was happy to be free again. Some hours after it, I contacted my friends and some people. They were happy to. And one of them was my lawyer, who was really shocked to see me out. So I was thanking him for letting me out. He said, "Imad, I don't know nothing about you. I don't know how did the prison let you out." After that, I knew that, you know, in Jordan, there is in the back scene, many people can control things. Obviously, somebody up there, maybe the king, maybe he interfered and requested that this thing should end up. My case transferred directly into the civil courts, and it was a really ordinary trial. I have a lawyer going regularly to the court, and ironically, the case was closed after like 4 months because the complainant or the guy who made the case is absent. He's not there. This is exactly the reason the judge gave to end the case. And I asked my lawyer, "What does this mean?" He says, "It's something conditional. So this guy is absent with the Jordanian government, for example. If it come again, the case could be raised again."
Yeah.
So that's still hanging over your head. And you have moved to the United States so that you can continue drawing your cartoons freely about in all of the foreign publications. And
one of the reasons.
Great. And, it makes me happy at a time when I'm usually not too happy with our new government in the United States. I'm certainly happy that they gave you a green card, and it is wonderful to have you here.
I think it's worth saying.
I didn't have.
Sorry, Imad.
Yes, please tell. Yeah.
I think it's worth saying for anyone that hasn't heard you speak before or doesn't know you so well. Imad is, without question, in my opinion, the most well-known cartoonist from Jordan, president of the Jordanian Cartoonist Association. As we've discussed, his work appeared regularly in foreign press, and Jordan, generally speaking, in relative terms, was perceived to be tolerant of satire, tolerant of the cartoonists that lived there, far more so than some of the other countries that are nearby. So when he was arrested, it was really a big deal, a high profile figure. If you were going to arrest a cartoonist, you couldn't have arrested a higher profile figure than Imad. And the message that's sent, no doubt to all the other cartoonists in the country, but to the rest of us as well, watching from outside, was really marked and really palpable. And you may disagree with me, I don't know, Imad, but in my opinion, because the case kind of came to nothing in the way that you describe, albeit with the possibility of it being reactivated in the future, but because it came on so strong to begin with and then seemed to just kind of peter out, in my opinion, you were used as a pawn. I think you were used to placate the UAE in a way that's quite disgraceful. And again, you can disagree with me, I don't know, and this may get cut out, but it's worth stating that in the same day that you were posting your stuff to social media, the junior prince in the royal family was making tweets about MBZ as well, and absolutely nothing happened to him, because nothing can happen to him, but something can happen to you.
Many people said that, actually, as you said it, Terry, but I should mention that I told you that I don't really what happened, but knowing now, and I'm talking 4 years after my meep into prison, I know definitely what happened now. I think that people like Terry, who raised their voice when I was put to prison, people like Darren, people like my colleague cartoonists all over the world who did cartoons about me in jail. I saw their wonderful works about me when I got out. Definitely, this helped a lot in letting me out. As a cartoonist in Jordan, yes, I am famous, but when it comes to authority and government, I'm nothing to them. I'm just a person. They can just throw me in jail and nobody will know about it. Now they know I'm not alone, because I have colleague cartoonists from all over the world raising their voice and asking for my release. This is one of the most valuable things that I will never forget in my life. If somebody I had to thank for me being free out of the jail, it is my colleague cartoonists everywhere who raise their voice and ask for my... And that's why I think, I should tell you frankly, the time before I was put to jail, I was looking at the other cartoonists putting to jail and the calls for their support. I wasn't taking them very seriously. And rarely I draw in solidarity with cartoonists in jail. After I was put to jail, and I know exactly how the cartoonist feel when he is inside the prison. And I took these calls very seriously. And I make my best now to do my best to raise my voice in solidarity with any cartoonist who's facing trouble or put to jail anywhere. And I think this is very, very important for us as a cartoonist to speak for ourselves and to stand beside each other. Talking about cartoonists who you said, Daryl, that Arab countries, thank you for showing the cartoons. I thank every single cartoonist who did a cartoon about me that time. And I'm having this collection. It's a very dear collection for me. And as I told you, it inspires me to do the same for any colleague cartoonist around the world. So I was saying that maybe the most miserable cartoonist who was put to jail is the Syrian cartoonist Akram Raslan. I don't know. I'm sure Tori know about him. In the year 2015, Akram was put to jail in Saidnaya prison in Syria, one of the most ugliest prisons in the world. Akram died under torture in that prison. Here's a cartoon for, not Akram Raslan, a cartoon for Ali Farzad. I'm sure you know him. Also, Ali have a very, very sad story. We'll talk about it if you want. But I'm talking about Akram. Akram is a cartoonist who spent some time in the prison and ended up to die under torture. Can you imagine this? An artist who used to draw in colors and draw wonderful ideas to draw. Suddenly, he's a victim of torture. He's slaughtered in some prison. It is really hard to me when I think about cartoonists in these situations. Sometimes I find my cartoons very, very minor. They cannot do anything for the horrible things that they face, for the horrible situation that some cartoonists, while we are talking now, they are facing hard times. They are left alone in their cells. And I hope it will not happen again to any other cartoonist. And for me, coming to the United States, yes, it is me seeking better conditions, because I will not change myself. I will keep cartoonists until the last moment of my... This is what we are. We love our job. Even if all of the newspapers closed, we will keep on drawing cartoons because we love this. It is our passion. It's the things that we are good at. It is giving our life our meanings. When I look at the cartoons of, like, the cartoon of Zahra or the cartoons of Mr. Terry or Daryl, I like these, wonderful people. We are like endangered species. We should not allow them to let us just finish. No, we will keep raising our voice. We will just keep doing our mess the way we like it as a cartoonist, because this is how we are. And we should not allow anybody to forbid us from doing this.
I had a question for Emma. I had a question for you 5 minutes ago. I was going to ask how this putting into jail and all the things you had to gone through has affected your motivation to draw. But now, after your last sentences, I have my answer. Thank you. And I totally agree with you. Yeah.
Thank you, Zach. Yeah, it is.
Zara, have you benefited? Do you feel you've benefited in the same way from international solidarity?
Yes, sure. Of course, it's the best thing that happened to me in this all this absurdity, because what's going on is already too much. It's sometimes too heavy to carry, like, all this imprisonment process possibility and all the threatings, blah, blah. But there is one good thing in it, that I felt all the solidarity from the supporting cartoonists organizations like Cartoonists Rights. I will tell it everywhere. And Cartooning for Peace in France also. And the one that invited me here, but I'm the first cartoonist that they invited me, ECBMF. So it's, and all the colleagues who support all over the world. It really helps, because sometimes when it's heavy to carry all these organizations and all these people, all the colleagues help you to carry it. You know, it's very, very important. Otherwise, it would be maybe impossible to go on drawing, because you question yourself. I mean, really big thing that you're facing. So it's very important.
Are you drawing for Turkish publications while you're in Germany?
I wasn't, but for a month, a very, very new, it's kind of application, like New Yorker, or I don't know how to describe it. But yes, I've started to draw for somewhere, but it's not a press media. It's only on social media and an application. So it's a digital thing, but I'm not drawing political cards. I cannot say political, yes, because they are trying to be very careful. They're a little afraid.
So the publications are not giving you an opportunity now because of your legal problems?
Yes, both because of my legal problems, because no newspaper wants to work with someone who is having troubles with government, because no one wants to face this risk, because it's all so much pressure on them and they don't want to take this extra pressure. So it's impossible to draw anywhere, actually. I'm drawing political cartoons. I need to draw in a newspaper or a media like this, but no one lets it. But I'm drawing for, like, I'm a member of Cartooning for Peace, and I'm drawing for them like every week, maybe. And my works are being published in sometimes in Le Monde or Le Temps.
Terry, do you have some stuff you can say about Cartoonist Right Network and how people can make a donation to you, which they certainly should do because of all your important work?
Sure. So we are 25 years old this year. We were incorporated in 1999. We are, despite my accent, an American nonprofit. So those watching in America, if you do make a donation, it is, of course, tax deductible. You can go to our website, cartoonistrights.org/donate. If you come see us in the month of December, that's when we always have our annual pledge drive. That kicks off on Giving Tuesday. That's the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, which this year would make it December 3rd. With any luck, we will be able to hopefully offer some incentives. Some generous cartoonists might give us some artwork that can be sent to donors as a thank you. But anything that you give, big or small, goes towards our core costs, keeps the lights on, keeps the phones manned, everything that we need to do in order to keep our eye on all these cartoonists around the world that need our help. And as I mentioned before, going into 2025, that's an awards giving year for us. Probably in May, World Press Freedom Day in May in 2025, we would expect to be recognizing another one of our brave cartoonists with the Robert Russell Courage in Cartooning Award.
Okay, any last words, everyone?
I don't like the whole endangered species thing, Imad. We are rare and beautiful things like unicorns, but that doesn't mean we're an endangered species.
Thank you, really, for raising the voice, for focusing on this important issue. I should mention that you have been a big support to me. I really thank this cast. It's one of the things that I enjoy, really, seeing stuff about cartoonists and their issues. Thank you.
Okay, well, remember to subscribe to the Kegelcast wherever you are watching or listening today. Our Kegelcast is available in both video and audio versions. So if you don't see the cartoon, go to kegel.com or Apple Podcasts or Rumble or YouTube or Spotify or kegelcast.com to see the cartoons in the video podcast. And be sure you go to kegel.com and subscribe to our free daily email newsletter so you won't miss any of the great cartoons, especially the cartoons from all the great world cartoonists. And thank you again, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
All right. I'll see you next time.